So, Stockholm calling, calling to our colleagues in the other 18 parliaments around EU. Dear colleagues, dear Commissioner, welcome to this informal meeting between chairpersons of the committees on EU affairs and the Commissioner of Home Affairs, Ms. Ylva Johansson. The topic for the meeting today is what can further be done, both nationally and at the EU level, in the area of preventing and fighting corruption. Before I give the floor to the Commissioner, I just want to go through some practical details. After the Commissioner's statement, I will give the floor according to the list of speakers that has been distributed. If we keep our speeches short, there will be time for those of you who have not notified in advance to take the floor if you wish. You can do this by clicking at the raise your hand button or write a comment in the chat room. The Commissioner will get the chance to sum up the discussion after the last speaker. We have the time to 12 o'clock Swedish time. Once again, welcome to this informal meeting on a very important topic. I look forward to an interesting discussion. Commissioner Johansson, please, the floor is yours, and we have said around 15 minutes. So, please, Brussels.
Thank you very much, Hans, and good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here together with you on this extremely important topic. And I'm looking forward to hear your contributions and questions, of course. There must be zero tolerance for corruption. Zero tolerance for bribes in brown envelopes. Zero tolerance for jobs for the boys. Cash for contracts. Cash for questions. Public servants should serve the public and not enrich themselves. And there must be zero tolerance for corruption because corruption enables organized crime. And organized crime is one of the biggest threats facing our society today. Responsible for brutal daily violence. In Sweden, my home country, we had this year 38 bomb attacks, over 70 shootings, killing 15 people, and it's only March. I should say that organized crime is as big a threat to our society as terrorism. Criminals undermine our society through corruption. Corruption is used by at least 60% of the organized criminal groups active in the European Union. They develop conscious business strategies to buy people, to buy politicians, to buy power. Criminals infiltrate the legal economy. As much as 80% of the criminal groups invest in construction, restaurants, hotels, and other parts of the legal economy. They buy properties and luxury goods to launder money and set up parallel underground financing systems. And organized crime is increasingly transnational. At least 70% of the organized criminal groups active in the European Union are active in more than three countries. And they are extremely sophisticated. They operate like and are organized at multinational businesses with global supply lines, exploit technology, and use encryption to hide their crimes. One of these criminal encryption tools that I used were EncroShut, and you're probably familiar with it. The EncroShut case really opened our eyes to the endemic links between corruption and organized crime. Police gained lawful access to EncroShut and could see criminals in real time plotting drug deals, torture, murder. And police could also stop these murders from happening. Police could read in real time chats between crime bosses and corrupt police officers and officials, for example, in the port of Antwerp. And if you know that Antwerp is the main port of entry for cocaine into Europe, and if you know that police last year seized more than 100 tons of cocaine in Antwerp alone, And that is just the tip of the iceberg. And if you know, this year a little girl was shot and killed in Antwerp, an innocent victim in a drugs war. She was just 11 years old. Then you know corruption is no victimless crime, but a dangerous, destructive, and deadly crime. We must root out corruption and fight it with the full force of the law. At the EU level and at member states level, our anti-fraud office, OLAF, investigates fraud involving EU funds. The European Public Prosecutor's Office, EPO, fights crimes against the EU budget. In its first 7 months of operation, EPO investigated more than 5 billion euros in losses to the EU budget. The fight against corruption is central to our strategy against organized crime. And a key goal of European police cooperation under EMPAC, the European Platform Against Criminal Threats. Our rule of law mechanism supports member states to counter corruption. We monitor prevention and repression of corruption and give clear recommendations in our annual rule of law report. Our next rule of law report will be published in July with a chapter for each member state. I call on you all to use this tool to combat corruption in your home countries. The most powerful instrument the Commission has against corruption is EU legislation. I will soon present updated anti-corruption rules. A top priority for this Commission, as announced by President von der Leyen in her State of the Union speech last September, because the current rules are not up to date and they are incomplete. There are big differences between member states, big differences which create big obstacles in countering corruption. What I want to do with my proposal is to criminalize all forms of corruption in all member states, not only bribery, as is the case today, but also trafficking in influence, illicit enrichment, embezzlement, and abuse of power. I want there to be tough penalties for these crimes and give law enforcement the tools they need. We are shaping this directive now as we speak, and I promise you I will be as ambitious as we can, as tough as we can. So remember, a blow against corruption is a blow against organized crime. I call on you to support my upcoming directive to do what you can to counter corruption at home in your member state. And I want you to know you can count on me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ylva, for an interesting presentation. I will now give the floor to the first person in the speakers list, and that is Mr. Jean-François Rapin from France, and after him we go to Poland. So please, Mr. Rapin.
Do you hear me? Please, Chairman.
Now we hear you very well. Please, Paris.
Dear Chairman, dear Mrs. European Commissioner, ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues. First of all, allow me to thank President Walmark for organizing this meeting. Every day in our territories, we can see the disconnection between our citizens and the European Union. As you know, the so-called Qatargate affair, which broke out last December and which is still being investigated by the Belgian prosecutor, was a real shock. I could break the confidence of citizens in the European institutions even more. Therefore, it seemed to me to be very important that the members of the national parliaments could discuss together how to improve the rules of ethics and transparency governing the activities of these institutions. This is why I wrote the Swedish presidency last December to ask that this subject be on the agenda of the next COSAC plenary meeting. The presidential troika preferred to organize an informal ad hoc meeting with a European commissioner. I'm pleased that this meeting can be held today with you, although I regret that we are not physically together and that we are exclusively exchanging in English. Mrs. European Commissioner, let me ask you two questions. The President of the European Commission has mentioned the establishment of a high European authority on the transparency of political life, like the one that already exists in France. I would therefore like to ask you, Madam, about the state of progress of the creation of such an authority. I would also like to know your opinion on the plan announced at the beginning of the year by the President of the European Parliament, consisting in 14 measures. These numerous measures are taking a long time to be put in place. However, we need to strike hard and fast, perhaps by limiting ourselves to adopting a few key measures. I am thinking of the creation of a committee on ethics or of better regulation of lobbying activities, for example, by making it compulsory for interest representatives to be registered in the European Transparency Register. I'm talking about these specific measures because I experience them on a daily basis as a French senator, but my colleagues in other parliaments of the unions will certainly have other good practices to share. With the next European elections in 2024 approaching, it seems to me in any case essential that we do not stand idly by. If we do not restore the confidence of citizens in the European institution, we risk having surprises at the ballot box next year. Thank you.
Thank you so much, dear Jean-François. Now we go to Kasper Paszynski from Poland, and after that to the Hellenic Republic.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Hopefully you can hear me and see me. Nice to see you again, Madam Commissioner, and I'm very happy what you said in the end of your speech, that you will be as tough as it is possible in preparing these regulations. Of course, you will have the all support you need in that coming from Polish side. And as to the detail, I'm very happy that you are preparing the harmonization of the anti-corruption law, including confiscation of the property coming from corruption on EU level. You have our whole support in that. I think the Qatargate showed also that the Qatargate affair showed that international joint investigation squads are those institutions that are very helpful and that have the all instruments needed to fight with that kind of international organized crime. So I think I believe that we should also on the basis of existing institutions such as European police, we should do that more often and tighten up our relations in that kind of investigation squads. Of course, transparency of law creating, also including public access to the documents, because me as MP, national MP, and I know that other MPs from other parliaments has the same problem. Well, we have great difficulties to sometimes gain any official, formal information about what is going on in more detailed way in legal process than only what is published on European Union pages or what is shared with Council of European Council. And I believe that it shouldn't be like that anymore. I even believe that maybe all European Union citizens of European Union countries should have bigger access to that kind of documents. In Poland, for example, we have this procedure where every citizen can apply for public documents, and there is a deadline of 2 weeks to share it with him. and it consists national level of institutions, but also local governmental institutions, and it actually works. It works, and it works very often, helping also fight corruption. Very often, those initiatives of just ordinary men and women from Poland were the start of big corruption trails, which ended in sentencing some of the officials. I believe that in case of this Qatargate affair, we should realize that going still in that direction where members of European Parliament can make money from all kind of directions, not only making salary from European Parliament, but also from other activities, that it is wrong, because it's wrong in every possible way. For once, they earn good money. They don't need to lose time to do other stuff, to do other works. And the second thing, I think it is the easiest way to hide bribes, just to give some kind of consultations to sometimes even non-governmental organizations, or issue some books that are very, very high on its price, and somebody's buying out those books. It sounds maybe stupid, but it is how it works. And I believe that members of parliament after this Qatargate scandal should just restrict more of their activities outside of European Parliament, especially those that are giving them income, because it's just easy to hide bribers behind of that. And other thing that is connected to, I don't want to say Madam Commissioner, but generally EU high officials. Well, non-competitiveness clause. Well, it shouldn't be like that anymore, that after ending your European Union career, you are just going to the private sector, working in other institutions in European, in Brussels or any others, lobbying, but having all those kind of contacts earned earlier and using it on your private manner. I think that in private sector, usually when you are changing jobs, you have that kind of clauses. I'm shocked that it isn't like normal routine in European Parliament, European institutions, in all other institutions, not only in European Parliament. And of course, like obvious thing, but still many, many countries in European Union haven't done it, I think, completely. There are those regulations, recommendations coming from organizations such as OECD, UN, MONEYWAC Committee, GRECO, FATF, Council of Europe. Well, we strongly recommend all the partners, our partners in the European Union, to start putting those recommendations into action. But it's going along with what I've started with you, my friends. So the harmonizations of law in general concerning corruption, because as we know, corruption in the European Union is more than national corruption. It's more like it's a broader problem, and usually it is about corruption without the borders. So thank you very much. And as I started my speech, you have all the support you needed, Madam Commissioner, in being tough as you can in that matter. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Warsaw. Thank you, dear Kasper. Let me go to Dimitri.
Nice, actually, my friend.
See you in Warsaw. Let me go to Dimitrios Kairidis from Athens, and then we go to Italy.
Limera from Athens, Greece. I'm delighted to join you, and I would like to congratulate the Swedish presidency for convening this meeting and for the excellent work it is doing this semester. And obviously, our dear commissioner, we are fully behind her efforts and her work. Corruption is a very serious problem, and it has a geostrategic dimension, which I want to refer to for a moment. castles fall from within, and corruption is a corrosive effect, especially political corruption, for our democracies, and can easily become a vehicle for our geostrategic adversaries, who cannot fight us directly, but indirectly through the corrosion of our democratic institutions. We have Russia, we have had Qatar, we have many other promoters of this kind of corruption, and in this new age of serious geostrategic antagonisms and challenges, we have to fight it not only for itself, but also because of the broader problems we have geostrategically internationally. I speak to you from the Hellenic Parliament, from the Parliament of Greece, overlooking the ancient citadel of the Acropolis and the Parthenon, and I cannot resist the temptation to refer to the first social scientist of all ages, Thucydides, who explained the defeat of Athens in the Peloponnesian War because not only of Sparta, but mainly because of the corrosion and the corruption of Athenian democracy. We have to be very vigilant. We owe it to ourselves, and we owe it for the big fight we have against authoritarian regimes that find these easy paths of corruption to sow confusion in our democracies and to put the citizens, our citizens, against their own institutions. So I commend you. We need to do more, and I look forward to our meeting in Stockholm in May to tighten up these kind of proposals. Thank you.
Thank you for this strong message from Athens. Then we have Giulio Maria Terzi di Sant'Agata from Italy, and after that, Portugal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson, and I would like to thank Commissioner Johansson for such an exhaustive and wide-ranging outlook on the relations between organized crime and foreign interference. When we talk about foreign interference, we should bear in mind that very often we are talking about interference from state actors, foreign state actors, and even organized countries that press on our sovereignty, on the sovereignty of the European Parliament, to obtain economic and political results. These are all issues that cause great concern. In the Italian Senate, we have introduced a motion that follows the directives of the European Parliament, the recommendations of the European Parliament of 15 December 2022 that I would like to recall. First of all, we need to strengthen the functioning of the transparency register, and it should be extended also to national level and to the representatives also of third countries, asking them to comply with the transparency requirements that NGOs have to comply with, and also it should be extended to those subjects, those persons and legal persons that use funds that do not come only from the members of the companies, but also from outside. And then we need to make effective the obligation for of declaration of financial interests also for ex-officials, ex-politicians, ex-members of the government, ex-high officials of the government. And I believe we should also revise the staff regulation of the European Union, because transparency rules for the Council, as has already been said, is a matter of great interest, of great focus by the public opinion, also following the recent judgment, the recent ruling of the Court of Justice. So why should we take the example of the experience of the American Congress, or the US Congress, where, of course, there is a lot of lobbying professionals there, There's a lot of professionals who represent third-party interests, but who make no mystery of their activity. That is officially declared, and they have to notify all the contacts that they have to notify all the and openly publicize all the contacts they have. And then I would like also to underline, following up to what Mrs. Johansson said, that Italy has finally transposed the European Directive on whistleblowing, and it is entering into force today. And Parliament has given an important, Italian Parliament has given an important contribution to the development of this regulation. And now in Italy, whistleblower protection is a right which is entirely guaranteed, both in public administration, but both in civil service and in private companies. So it's an important stride forward. And the national Italy's national anti-corruption law anti-corruption board is the main body to prevent corruption. The Customs and Finance Duty Police is also taking action. And the Bank of Italy has an independent corruption prevention authority, and the Italian Court of Accounts has also powers in this respect. In January this year, a national anti-corruption plan was approved, and it is a three-year plan. And this is important. This overall framework is important because this underlines the attention, the focus that we are putting on the funds under the National Reconstruction and Resilience Plan. And the new code for public contracts will be informed by these regulations. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson.
Grazie. Then we go to Lisboa, Luis Capolo Santos. After that, Poland.
Good morning. I would like to begin by thanking Hans for this initiative, which continues the good experience begun by the German presidency and continued since then by all subsequent presidencies, with a view to closer collaboration between national parliaments and European institutions, in particular the Commission. I also thank Commissioner Ylva Johansson for her availability to be with us once again. More than corruption in itself, which is a phenomenon that has always been present in all human societies, what is really serious is the perception that citizens have of it in today's democratic societies, which, in the Portuguese case, is often far greater than the reality. It aims to discredit politicians and democratic institutions with a view to destroying liberal systems. Preventing and combating corruption must therefore be a political priority for the European Union and for all its member states. The Portuguese Parliament therefore fully supports the Commission's most recent efforts and initiatives in this regard. Also in Portugal, the program of the current government as one of its fundamental objectives to conduct a determined fight against corruption. We have approved and are implementing the National Strategy Against Corruption, which contains several measures aimed at its prevention, detection, and repression. In 2022, 3,600 cases were opened by the judicial authorities, resulting in 161 indictments, about 5%, and 1,600 cases were archived, 44%, with the remaining 51 cases being processed. However, without a swift justice, the fight lose strength because it is fundamental that it presents results and clearly demonstrates what is reality and what is fiction. The delays in justice, which many justify by the excessive guarantees given to defendants, has been one of the main problems for which, until now, no satisfactory answers have been found capable of balancing simplification of procedures, celerity, and guarantees. This is a good subject for debate at the next meeting of COSAC presidents with the European Commission. Thank you.
Obrigado. Then we go to Bogdan Klich, Poland, and after that we go to Hungary.
Dear colleagues, dear chairman, it is as always a pleasure to be again with you and to concentrate on such an important issue as the corruption and our anti-corruption activity. I understand that we talk about one of the crucial dimensions of the European Union's behavior and one of the crucial challenges for our political elites and for our societies. That's why let me begin with the consciousness that the anti-corruption activity should be connected with the rule of law enforcement within the European Union. This area is crucial for the future of the EU because without such a rule of law enforcement, there will be no united European construction. There will be no effective union without that. So the protection of independence of judiciary in every member state of the European Union, together with the necessary implementation of the European Tribunal's verdicts, they are absolutely crucial for the future of the European project. And particularly, in order to efficiently fight corruption in the modern days, the following areas need to be considered. First of all, this is adapting institutional solutions to changing circumstances within and around the European Union. Secondly, strengthening educational and preventive measures. As for the first one, due to technological development, but also to the dynamically changing geopolitical and social situation, corruption threats and methods used by criminals are constantly evolving. Extremely important are both, first of all, the domestic and secondly, the international market law enforcement, when authorities keep up with these changes, not only technologically and in terms of the development of available tools. Secondly, strengthening educational and preventive measures that I mentioned before should be understood as an activity against this pathological social phenomenon that requires strong educational involvement and strong preventive measures. In this context, the anti-corruption system should focus on the roots of the corruption and not only the effects of it. The most important from this point of view issue in the fight against corruption is systematic and continuous undertaking of actions aimed at combating the foundations of corruption, raising anti-corruption awareness, and promoting honest behavior that is crucial to continue in our societies. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Bogdan. We go to Boglarka Iles in Hungary, and then we go to Cyprus.
Thank you for the floor. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairman, Madam Commissioner, dear colleagues. I would also like to thank you for the French initiative to deal with the most serious current Brussels-level corruption case involving the EP, and for the Swedish presidency to make this important meeting happening. Hungary has always underlined its support and determination for the prevention and fight against organized crime and corruption, both nationally and at EU level. Regarding the time frame, I would like to highlight just three topics. First, after 2010, we changed the legal framework of the public funding of political parties, which created a greater transparency on this field. We raised the amount to be used for the support of the parties and foundations of the parties. Political parties shall publish the financial statement in the Hungarian official journal by the end of May each year, and also on their website. But not only the publicity control, the legality of the financial management of the parties, but also the state audit office shall be authorized. Second, Hungary is a middle-sized country, as you know. Therefore, we have a very strict rule on political parties. Parties shall not be authorized to accept any financial contribution from foreign states or from foreign organizations or from natural persons of citizenship other than Hungarian. Parties may not accept anonymous donations. Despite of this, it seems to be the largest case of campaign financial fraud in Hungary's democratic history, broke in late November after last year's parliamentary elections involving some Hungarian opposition parties. Therefore, before the European parliamentary elections, we want to prepare and admit stricter rules on this matter. And third, I think that is also important that actively tackling corruption is paramount if the EU institutions are willing to restore their shattered credibility. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Budapest. We go to Konstantinos Efrestasio from Cyprus and after that to Netherlands.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A rule of law requires the implementation of law. And the implementation of law, the law enforcement, must be done in a very open and very functioning way. This is why we suggest to all of us in European standard, that there must be a clear and clean monitoring enforcement mechanism in Europe. And what is required is the check and balance system. There is no bastion when implementing or enforcing the law. There is always the tendency of corruption and of abuse of position when somebody feels like acting alone without any control. So checks and balances within the national legal framework is essential in this respect. So I will give an example in Cyprus. We have recently adopted the anti-corruption authority against corruption, which constitutes also a check and balance vis-a-vis to Attorney General's office, which was the only authority when fighting corruption and crime. So by creating check and balances well functioning in national framework, we think that will be a contribution to fight against corruption and crime. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nicosia. And we go to Margaret De Boer from Netherlands, and after that we go to Italy.
Hear me? Yeah, there I am. Thank you for the invitation to the Commissioner, and also thank you for your initiative. I want to raise a few points. First, I want to mention the Netherlands, I looked it up, is number 8 on the corruption index, meaning the number 8 less corrupt countries in the world. And although that might be look good, it is also, I think, a reason why corruption is not very high on our political agenda, and only rather recently there has been some initiatives for legislation, for example, on where ex-politicians can work, on the financing of political parties and the financing of NGOs and a lobby register, which we still do not have in the Netherlands. So that about our situation, and I think we have steps to make here because even when it's not very present, the threat is always there, and we should be tough on it, as the Commissioner said. Then about the connection between corruption and organized crime, I think it surely is there, but I think we also have to see corruption as such as organized crime. This it's not only connected to other forms of organized crime, but it's organized crime in itself. And it also comes from companies, from states. And I think we have to look also on the influencing, the unlawful influencing of, for example, big industries. We have to see it as organized crime. And it's good to be tough, but we also have to take in account the basic human rights on privacy, on defendant rights, with all the protective measures in criminal laws, in the European Convention on Human Rights. Two last remarks. I fully endorse the remarks made about transparency. I think it's key to prevent corruption, and it's transparency on documents and transparency on finances. Both. And my last remark is I'm a member of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, and from that perspective, very known also to the work of GRECO, the group of countries against corruption. And my question to the Commissioner is in what way she will connect her work to the work GRECO is already doing, because I think it's always the waste of energy to reinvent the wheel. And a question connected to that is whether the EU itself has an intention not only to enter the European Convention on Human Rights, but maybe also as an institution enter GRECO, so that the EU institutions will also have to follow the GRECO rulings and rules and can take part in the GRECO monitoring. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret. We go to Mariana Madia, Italy, and after that we go to France.
Very much. Thank you very much, Madam Commissioner. I would like to thank also the colleagues who took the floor before me. And clearly, the fight against corruption has to be a priority, both for member states and for the European Union. I would like to underline three issues. Very briefly, because Italy already took the floor. First of all, the first one concerns my country. Italy is the country that in the years 2012-2022, with respect to Corruption Perception Index, has made the greatest progress. That is no coincidence. That is the outcome of regulations that were passed during the last few years. I would like to quote a couple of those, which I was able to pass as I was when I was civil service minister in two previous governments, and one was the establishment of the National Anti-Corruption Law Board and the passage of a Freedom of Information Act, because I believe that transparency is the best policy tool to prevent corruption. I think it is not an option. I think it's a duty. Also, with respect to what our Greek colleague was saying, the need to bring citizens closer to the European national institutions in order to avoid a spin-off of our democracies. And I'll go back to this idea of transparency, the principle of transparency. I would like to thank EU Parliament President Metsola. I think the measures she took, both the immediate measures, but both for the short term and for the long term, I believe those measures are excellent. And I think we should really insist on the transparency of the legislative process. There will be a new package from the European Commission, and you're all anxious to see that. And the policy chosen by the Commission to deal with the corruption from third countries, and also the question of the corruption from countries where there are human rights violations. These are all issues that have to be dealt with and that should be embraced. And they were also dealt with by the European Council and the European Parliament. And now I'm coming to the third point, to my third point. All this is connected to the national, to the NRRP or to Next Generation EU. This is the funds that have been made available by the Commission to the member states in the aftermath of the pandemic. Clearly, when there is a corruption, you have to follow the money. And surely there will be lots of money to spend. And the initiatives, the actions of the European Union and of national parliaments, of national governments, must help us to spend, but to spend well, the fund from the Next Generation EU. And I believe that the antidote there, again, is maximum transparency. Thank you very much.
Grazie. We started with France and we ending with France. So Pierre-Henri Dumont in Paris.
Thank you, Madam Commissioner, for your presentation. We are all aware that corruption can have devastating consequences for societies and economies. It undermines citizens' trust in democratic institutions. It disrupts the fair functioning of the marketplace, and it hinders economic growth. The unfortunate series of events that took place last December has taught us that we cannot let corruption flourish in the European Union. We must act with determination and resolve to eliminate this scourge. This implies greater transparency and more rigorous control mechanisms to prevent conflicts of interest and favoritism. In this sense, anti-corruption efforts undertaken by the European Commission are praiseworthy. I also stand behind the recent resolutions adopted in the European Parliament following the affair that occurred in the European Parliament. I believe that the European Union, its institutions and its stakeholders should adopt a tolerance zero policy regarding corruption. The fight against corruption should constitute one of the top priorities of the European institutions. Nevertheless, guaranteeing transparency and accountability in the European institutions is necessary, and more actions should be taken on. We have a responsibility to protect the interests of our citizens as businesses from corruption. In addition, I believe it is important to dedicate part of the fight against corruption to criminal networks, which constitute a threat to the internal security of the Union, but also to the rule of law. Those networks benefit financially from corruption, and the European Union must act to prevent it. Thus, sanctions for participation in corrupt activities must be put in place and must be proportionate to the damage caused to the rule of law in the European Union, while deterring future corruption. Sanctions against corruption should also be carried out by member states in their national legislation. Finally, the creation of an agency, as suggested in the resolution adopted by the European Parliament, to prevent and respond to corruption seems relevant and important. The creation of the same type of agency in France, the French Anti-Corruption Agency, has allowed a better guidance regarding corruption. Members of the European Commission, we have a responsibility to protect the interests of our citizens and businesses from corruption. We must act with determination and conviction to make the European Union a corruption-free region. I am convinced that we can achieve this if we work together with determination and commitment. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you so much. Thank you, dear colleagues. Thank you for your highly valuable interventions. I will now give the floor back to the Commissioner. So please, Ylva Johansson.
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you all for your contributions. I think I will try to answer your question, but first a small remark. Many of you mentioned this so-called Qatar Gate, and I think this is really, really important. It has to be addressed, of course, by the European Parliament in their how they strengthen their regulations and and procedures, but it's also important to mention that this is not only an issue of ethics, this is a serious crime that is now being investigated, and members of parliament and also former member of parliament still in custody for this. So, and the investigation, of course, is ongoing, but it's important to stress. The other thing I would like to stress is that corruption is a severe problem in our member states. According to the Eurobarometer last year, in average, in our 27 member states, individuals say that 68% of individuals say that corruption is a problem in their country. 62% of companies that have been asked by the Eurobarometer say that corruption is a big problem in their country. So this is something that is present and actually harms their trust in our societies. So I fully agree with all of you that said that how important this is to fight. To Jean-François Rapin, the ethics body. So we have taken the initiative to this ethics body. So now we are from the Commission side in consultation with the other institutions to make a common proposal, because we would like to have a same one for us in the Commission, together with the European Parliament, with the Council, with the Committee of the Regions and the other committees. So hopefully that could, we can achieve that. Otherwise, we will go ahead ourselves, but I hope that we can achieve it. And this is now in the consultation with the other bodies. And when it comes to the European Parliament's measures, of course, it's not for me to judge their measures, but I think it's for them, of course, to do that. But I can also say to you that we have in the Commission, we have our transparency rules in place, and also to Kasper Plasinski, we also have the rules when it comes to the revolving doors problems for commissioners, for example. So this is important. It's already in place. But can we be sure that we have enough regulation? No, we cannot be sure. So that's why we are also looking into whether we need to strengthen our own regulation and procedures in the Commission. It's my colleague Vera Jourova who is in charge of that. And to Kasper Plasinski from Poland. So we always do consultations on our proposal. For example, the anti-corruption proposal that I'm now preparing, we have consulted member states extensively. We have also sent out dedicated questionnaires. We have two workshops. We have a lot of bilateral contacts. We are also, of course, consulting international organizations, including GRECO, that was mentioned by, I think, the colleague from the Netherlands. We consult with stakeholders. So this is, of course, always a very important part of our preparation of any legislation, but not at least for this one. Dimitros Kairidis, who raised this the problem with the foreign influence, with this Qatar gate now is being investigated. So I think this is a very important angle. So we are also preparing from the Commission a defense of democracy package that hopefully will come, be presented at the end of May, that will also address this aspect. And Giulio Maria Terzi also mentioned this on the foreign interference. We will also looking into the funding from outside of EU to influence public opinion in the EU against European values. And this is also part of what we are looking into now for the preparation of the proposals. And Luis Capola Santos, you asked also what we are basing on. So we are working with our rule of law report. We are based on the Transparency International Index, but also on our own Eurobarometer on anti-corruption. I really encourage you to look into the different, for your specific member state, into the rule of law report that we're presenting in July, and especially the anti-corruption part. This rule of law report, we have now done it, I think, three times. And now, so this is a new instrument, and I should say it's a very good one. And we are also developing it better and better, I should say, for each year. So, and of course, we are always interested to hear your how you see this report, and what if you have suggestions how we can make it even better. Always interesting to take part to receive that kind of comments, of course. Bogdan Klik, you also mentioned the rule of law report. So this is important for as I just said, for the judiciary, the anti-corruption, media, checks and balance. We look into all that. Last year, for the first time, we also made recommendations to member states. And I think this is what we'll be continuing with, and also to see how member states are implementing the recommendations. Prevention is, of course, extremely important when it comes to prevent corruption. And this will also be part of the proposal that I will present in a month. Konstantinos Efstatidou, checks and balances and monitoring. I think this is extremely important. I fully agree on that. So what we are looking into right now, whether it should be part of the proposal or not, I can't say, because one of this is part of the preparation. But we are looking into whether we should have a proposal on a specialized bodies for prevention of corruption in member states. But to be seen where we will land on this. And Margrethe de Boer, yes, corruption is an organized crime. I fully agree on that. You also mentioned the prevention. Safeguards, of course, are very important. We will have that as well. Your specific question on GRECO. So as I already mentioned, we work very close with GRECO, for example, when we are preparing these proposals. And also when it comes to the rule of law report. We are an observer in GRECO right now, the European Commission. We are looking into how we could intensify our cooperation with GRECO. So that what you mentioned could be part of that, but we're not there yet. Can I also mention that we are part of the UN Convention Against Corruption, and the Commission is now undergoing a peer review when it comes to anti-corruptions. And corruption of third countries was mentioned by Maria Anna Madia, and thank you also for explaining the great developments in Italy. I think it's really good. And this corruption in third countries is also, many of you have mentioned it, a different aspect of it. One is also to see how this will work with the CFSP sanctions. So that is also one part of what we are preparing. So yet you can hear after this State of the Union speech from our president in September, a lot of work is ongoing in the Commission, and proposals will come pretty soon for you also to look into. Can I also mention a few things that was not so much raised by you in the questions? One is the media. Media freedom is extremely important for transparency. So this is really, and in the rule of law report, we have a special chapter for each member state on the media freedom. And I should recommend that you read, you know, the chapter on anti-corruption together with the chapter on the media freedom, because it's very much linked. This is really important. And we have recommendations in that aspect as well towards member states. And this, I think, really should be stressed even more. Also, for your information, I presented earlier last year a new proposal on confiscation and freezing of criminal assets, with much quicker freezing, but also with the possibility of confiscation without convictions, with the so-called unexplained wealth. And this is also have a link to corruption cases, of course. This is now being prepared by the co-legislators on their positions, and I hope that we will be able to finalize this new legislation this year. The last thing I would like to mention is many of you mentioned prevention, and of course that is of the highest importance, but can I also mention convictions? Because it's important that people are being prosecuted and convicted. And there we see actually very few cases in our member states of high-level people that are actually being prosecuted and convicted. And this, of course, gives sometimes the impression of impunity when it comes to corruption. So that is also what would be my last word here. So thank you very much for your strong engagement. Thank you for the good explanations from the different countries that you have been given. And I'm looking forward to continue cooperating with you on this very important topic. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Ylva. And thank you also for diving into all the questions that was raised by my colleagues. I think you made that was great. And also on a personal note, I totally agree with you on the media. Before I entered in politics, I was a journalist and a publisher, so I totally agree with you on the importance of media. And to extremely short summarize, but I think what you said about that it's, this is not only about ethics inside parliaments and inside country, it's also a severe crime, and we need to treat it as that severe crime. So, dear colleagues, dear Commissioner, I want to thank you all for your participation. It has been an hour of interesting speeches, interventions, and resulting in some food for thoughts. Preventing and fighting corruption is more important than ever to ensure credibility and durability for our democratic institutions. So, with those words, once again, the watch is exactly 12 o'clock. Thank you for connecting today, and I hope to see you all in Stockholm in May for the COSAC plenary meeting. Thank you all.